हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 15, Adhyaya 2, Adhikarna 2, Puranas are Vedic. It is also said in Vishnu Dharma, Rig Vedo ta Yajur Veda, Sama Vedo Pyataravana, Adhitas tena yenoktam, Hera it Yakshara Dvayam. He who recites the two syllables Hari has studied the Rig Yajur Samana Tarva Vedas from Vishnu Dharma. Bharata Vyapadeshena Hyamnayar Ta Pradarshita Veda Pratishtita Sarave Purane Natra Shamshaya. By the teaching of Mahabharata, I have shown the meaning of the Vedas. The Vedas are established in all the Puranas without doubt, from Vishnu Purana. Though the Puranas are included in works that reveal the meaning of the Vedas, the Puranas and Mahabharata are superior to other works because of the revealer's excellence. It is said in Padma Purana, Dvaipai yanena yad bhudham Brahmadhyaistan nabhudyate Sarva buddham savai veda Tad buddham nanya gocharaha. What is understood by Vyas is not understood by Brahma and others. He knows everything. His understanding cannot be approached by anyone. Padma Purana. Anucheda Prakashita. So that was the Anucheda. Okay, serious Anucheda. He wants to make sure you understand what's going on.
When it is said here that one recites Hari, we have studied all the Vedas.
Yes.
We can also say, okay, so what is the need to study? Because we chant Hari.
But can you chant Hari all day? So we have to keep ourselves busy. And the whole point is someone who chants Hari will also be always liking to hear and chant about Krishna. So it's just another form of chanting. Right? It's not study meaning it's a work. It's study meaning it's something that you like to do.
It is the same.
It's just like, let's say... Yeah, no, go ahead.
So, like the same type of to study, we study for glorifying Krishna.
Yeah. Means like that just the study itself is glorifying. It's hearing, chanting, remembering about Krishna. So it's just part of the process of the devotional process. And in the Pancharatra, then Swadhyaya is one of the angas of deity worship. Is that you're studying because you're learning about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, hearing about Krishna and the devotees. So the whole point of the Veda is to surrender to Hari. So if you're chanting the name of Hari, you've understood the whole purpose of the Veda. So what we're studying is those scriptures that then give us an insight into the pastimes of the Lord with his devotees, so his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So we're not specifically going and studying the Veda. Right? You know, so unless it's there's something that you need to do, so therefore you study the Veda, then there's no need to study the Veda separately. Because the purpose of the Veda is already given in the Bhagavatam and those literatures in pursuance of Bhagavatam. Okay?
Yeah. Also, Maharaj, the Vedas are studied to come at this conclusion. So we already start from the conclusion.
Yeah, so that's the, like we were saying, that Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, that if, I don't know about nowadays, but in the 70s, that verse was used to get people to take up devotional service and become devotees. But as I mentioned, with the Ramanuja line, for them, that's, you know, vanaprastha stage of life, where they really get serious and surrender. But we start there. You know what I'm saying? As far as that consciousness and that surrender there. Maybe not in the culture, but we start, you know, some of it. So that's the whole point, is that since the Vedas are for knowing Hari, if we're already serving Hari, then one has studied, has the benefit of studying all the Vedas. But having done that, then you don't sit back. Right? Means this, that, why would we sit back?
Thinking of liberation.
Liberation or vacation. You know, it's like you work and then you want a break. But the point is this is not work. Serving Krishna is not work. So that's where one has the taste. So then one is always inspired to continue that hearing and chanting process about Krishna. Because you've already come to the conclusion that you should hear and chant about Krishna. So now that's what we do. Right? It's not that overattain that, then nothing, because that's why it says chanting the holy name is the process, chanting the holy name is the goal. So once one comes to that platform, one continues to chant. So there's no, you don't need a vacation for something you like to do. Like that? Is that okay? Yes.
Prabhupada writes in one of the purpose, one who takes pleasure in chanting the holy names is the highest Vedantist.
Highest Vedantist, yes. So there you have. But if you're chanting, you've already studied all, equivalent of studying all the Vedas, and then one who's always chanting, then they are the highest Vedantist. Okay. That makes sense? So it just continues. It's just the life, it's what someone wants to do. Yeah? Anucheda Prakashika. Srila Jiva Goswami here concludes his presentation that the Puranas and Itihasas are co-eternal with the Vedas and A Paurusheya, without human author. Would it maybe and are?
Yeah,
okay. He considers how they are equivalent to the Vedas and how they are different. He also establishes how Puranas are highest among all the Smritis. Moreover, a few objections are dealt with. The first concerns the Puranas and Itihasas' alleged temporal nature compared to the Shruti. The second deals with doubts about the Brahminical qualification of the Puranas' main speaker, Srila Sutta Goswami. Lastly, Jiva Goswami weighs their conclusions with those of the Shankya Smriti. The answers for the two first objections are elaborated in Baladev commentary, whereas the third objection is elaborated by Jiva Goswami himself in his commentary. Sarva Sambhadini, Vishaya. Puranas and Itihasas are also Veda. So that's the point. So now here's the doubt and their argument. Samshaya and Purvapaksha. But if you claim that all Smritis are equivalent to the Vedas, then you must necessarily accept the conclusions of every Smriti as authoritative. We observe, however, that many Smriti give contradictory conclusions. For example, followers of Shankya philosophy in the Shankya Smriti consider Pradhan to be the final, independent cause of creation. Therefore, none of your conclusions carry any weight. Like, so if you're saying that they're equivalent to the Veda, so that would mean then they all have that, but we see that they all have different conclusions, and here's one that gives a conclusion different from what the Vedas said. So therefore, then your whole thing is useless. That's their point. Uttara. Puranas and Itihasas does not include other works resembling Smritis which have conclusions contrary to the Smritis. Smritiana Ana Vakasha Dosha Prasanga Iti Chen Nanya Smritiana Vakasha Dosha Prasangata. If one argues that refusing the conclusions of Shankya Smriti would make that scripture useless, the answer is no, for accepting it would render the conclusions of other Smritis useless. Brahma Sutra 2119. Right, so he's saying is that if we accept what Shankya Smriti says, then it makes all the Vedas have no meaning. So what's the problem in dropping Shankya Smriti as authoritative? Because we've accepted that the Vedas are authoritative. Right? Footnote 9. Shankya version itself contradicts many of the Smritis which are authoritative because their authors are faithful to the Vedas. Both Mano and Parasar in the Dharma Shastras acknowledge Brahman explicitly to be the supreme cause. The argument Vyas gives in his reply is meant to convince those who think Smritis authoritative, that who think Smritis are authoritative independently of the Vedas. The true adherents of Vedic revelation think, on the contrary, that the only valid Smritis are those that do not contradict the Vedas. The Shankya Sutras do go against the teaching of the Vedas, and this settles the question. In fact, we learn from reliable Smritis that Kapila, the author of the Shankya Sutras, is an impostor trying to usurp the authority of the original Kapila, the son of Devahuti, an avatar of the Supreme Lord. Right, so he's trying to come in and just say he's like somebody shows up and says they're Kalki or that they're Buddha or, you know, it's a very standard thing. He's around here, I think, in, you know, the other side, you know, in Europe, then, you know, they think they're Napoleon or something, you know, like that. You know, so it's just a matter of he's coming in and trying to use the Shankya in his own atheistic way and get that credit, get that, you know, facility, glory, all that. So it's a problem. Purva Paksha. There is the following doubt. Nacha smartam atad dharma bilapat. The antayami is not pradhan because qualities are mentioned that do not belong to pradhan. Brahma Sutra 1.2.19. In the above sutra, smriti means pradhan. Did not Vyas, who arranged the shrutis, call the purana smriti because they deal mainly with pradhan as the final cause, as propounded by the followers of Shankya, whereas the Vedas do not discuss it. Footnote 10. Right, so now here they're using another angle trying to, because they use their first argument is with Shankya, right, giving that as the evidence. And now they're trying to show how the, you know, that just, you know, all Smritis, so therefore this one's wrong, so they're all wrong. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to compare Puranas that they are the same as the Shankya Smriti. Right? So, which already before says is, what does that have to do with it? What's in line with the Veda is that, and what's not is there. Right? So they're trying to show how it's not in line. Footnote 10. The opponent argues that when Sri Bhadarayana says, nor is this, that is the absolute, the material nature described in Smriti, because the qualities mentioned for the absolute do not belong to nature, he is referring to the material nature described in Smriti, not in Shruti, and implying that the Puranas, which deal with material nature, are also Smritis, and therefore lacking authority. Uttara. That is not so. Vyas does not accept Pradhan as independent. He does not consider Shankya philosophy as Smriti because it propounds independent Pradhan. In the following sutra, he states that Pradhan is dependent on the Supreme Lord. Tad adhi natvad artavad. Pradhan is useful since it produces the world under the Lord's direction. Brahma Sutra 1.4.3. Pradhan is also known as avyakrita. That Pradhan is not independent is also seen in the Puranas. The Shankya texts are not regular smritis. Baladev's commentary. Riti. Here Baladev elaborates on a doubt addressed by Jiva Goswami in this Anucheda regarding the eternal nature of the Puranas. So the doubt, Purva Paksha. The Puranas have names like Skanda Purana and Agni Purana. Having been composed by these persons, Skanda and Agni, they must, therefore, not be apaurusheya and not be eternal. And this, now, he is known as, is this the Uttara? Or is this the continuation of the
Uttara?
Huh? Okay, so you should put that in. Okay, so this is the Uttara. He is known as Veda Vyas because he divided Vyasta, the Vedas. Skanda Purana is so called not because it was written by Skanda, but it was spoken by him. Just as a composition is called Kataka because it was learned by the person named Kata. The parts of the Vedas studied by Kata are called Kataka. According to Gotra Varanad Vun, Panini 4.3.126. Kataka means the Dharma and tradition of the school of Kata. Thus, the meaning of Kataka is the works studied by Kataka. Similarly, the Puranas were spoken by Skanda and others, but not made by them. Otherwise, they would not be eternal. But it's just like we're sitting here and we're speaking, but it's not that now we're creating this literature. We're just speaking what is already existent. So Skanda, he's speaking, but because it's the that particular branch of knowledge or that presentation of knowledge has been spoken by him and has documented what he's spoken. It's been spoken by so many people before, but the one that he spoke is taken as to be the one that will be presented. Right? Just like Sukadeva Goswami is speaking Bhagavatam, but it's Suta Goswami's rendition that is then documented. Right? Because of the nature of the conversation and that, it makes it very accessible, very understandable. Does that make sense? Because Sukadeva's may not be as much as Suta's, because there's questions there. You know, you have to know the position of the Lord, the position of the Mahabharata, how Bhagavatam came into being. Now, what do you do once now Sukadeva Goswami has finished his rendition? Well, how are we supposed to appreciate and understand? Does that make sense? And then the questions that are asked by means you have Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, then that discussion is the main. But you also see the sages now again make points and ask questions that add to it. So that, especially the opening and closing, but then in between a little bit, so then that presentation. Does that make sense? So the Puranas then are all Suta Goswami's discussions on that knowledge. Right? And that he's discussing what Skanda has. So Bhagavatam is what Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. But now this is now what Skanda has discussed, or what Agni's discussed, or some examples. So it's the same principle. Right? And they're simply discussing what was there before that. Right? It's like, I think, the 87th chapter in the 10th canto. Then there's a discussion that refers to a discussion that refers to a discussion. And so then it was the prayers of personified Vedas. And that was then given as evidence for one discussion, that was given for another, and then like that. So if it's nicely presented, then that's always then taken.
So it seems that we need to open our mind that everything comes from Krishna and there are many things before us.
Yes. Amazing, amazing that there are other people who have been here before, know more than us, knew it before us.
Yeah.
And we'll still know it after we go. Right? You know, yeah.
And they're much smarter than us.
We're avoiding that one. But yes, they're much smarter than us. And they're much smarter than us.
Yeah. Many times, Manu Samhita is regarded as it is given by Manu only, created by Manu only.
Yes.
You never see that the Lord has given
it to us. Yes, because the Lord doesn't have a problem. He's given it to Brahma, who's Swayambhuva. He's given it to his son, Swayambhuva. Because he's Swayambhuva Manu. But Brahma is also Swayambhu, because he's unborn. And he's also Manu, because he's the progenitor of mankind. Krishna is also Swayambhu, because he's unborn. And he's the progenitor of Brahma, like this. Does that make sense? But it's the knowledge. This is the knowledge that Swayambhuva Manu teaches to mankind, right? But he's heard it from Brahma, who's heard it from Krishna.
Many times in classes, no one understands that.
Yeah, so they'll just think it's just that, and you know, and we chant, we don't have to worry about these things and all that. And then you mention something that, you know, is more devotional and all that, and then someone will get very upset because it goes against, you know, corporate management. Because you can't break those rules, right? But Manu, yeah, what do we get? Does that make sense? Putra. Okay, so. Okay, that's the Put.
We are supposed to do Vittim Maharaj.
Oh, we're on Baladesh. Yeah, down here. Okay. Purva Paksha, the Puranas have names. Oh, no, we did that. We did that. We're down to the Vittim. Some of the Puranas are spoken by Skanda and others, but not made by them. Otherwise, it would not be eternal. Or the names indicate the successive causes of production. Anu Purvi of the Puranas. Riti, right? Means, in other words, aspects of the Parampara. You know, it's just like the Yadus. They're called Yadus because of someone in the line. They all are descendant of Yadu. So they're called the Yadavas. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, Kviti. So here, the Acharya's counter, it doesn't mean that Yadu didn't have a father. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Yes, and then he also had a father. You know, so what I was saying is someone prominent in the line is taken, either because of what they added, the glory that they brought to the line, or the particular rendition is very, you know, very good for us, because each of these Puranas is much bigger. So they've only taken the essential. And so then in here, the essential point, then this aspect is considered very good. Like that. We'll be able to appreciate it.
Also, Vyasadev gave us like one of the major aspects of the Puranas. But there are Paramparas who follow some other like Puranas which were going on. Like we saw that there are 1 billion verses in the...
Yes, yes. But whether they're here on Earth, that's another thing. But if you go up to the higher planets, they're there. But these parts will all be in that. They're part of that 1 billion. And so that's the essence. So if you're dealing with the essence, then it's all right. Vriti. Mm-hmm. So here the Acharyas counters the argument as follows. Quote, no, if this were the case, the Vedas themselves would have to be considered Paurusheya, since some parts have names like Katha Upanishad and Aitareya Brahmana, which refer to the sages Katha and Aitareya. End quote. Whether Shruti or Smriti, numerous portions of the Vedas are named after sages or demigods. However, this does not entail authorship. They were not necessarily composed by their namesakes. Rather, these texts derive their names from the main proponent, their main exponent, first teacher or rearranger. Yes, so main exponent means who's mainly speaking. First teacher, first one is teaching, you know, like that. It's already there, but he's teaching it. Or who rearranges it or does some nice, like that. Similarly, some scriptures are named after their prominent object of glorification, be it a demigod or deity. In either case, the names are fixed by eternal convention. The first Purana, for example, is named after Brahma eternally, even though the post is occupied by different jivas in different cycles of creation. This same pattern of eternal scriptures with eternal names, but changing speakers or deities, is also seen in the Vedic Shrutis. For instance, one branch of the Ajurveda is called Katha, because in each age, a sage named Katha teaches it and passes it on to his disciples in succession, the Katakas. Right? Even though in each age, it will be a different jiva who's taking this position. But so when we're saying it's chewing the chewed, it means that it's always the same thing. But it's so, there's so much variety within it that we don't catch that. But it's exactly the same thing. Right? Because if it's never the same, then what do you relate things to? Right? If every day you're eating something totally different that you have no experience of, then when you say, well, what's this like? You can't, what do you say it's like? You can't. So that's why you have to have enough commonality that therefore then you have the culture and the experiences and you can relate to people and interact and have community. But at the same time, there has to be enough variety to, you know, make it refreshing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Only in the spiritual atmosphere we can do that.
Only in the spiritual atmosphere does it not become old.
Yes.
Means the material atmosphere is big enough, but it's always losing its taste.
Yes.
But there's always the ideal there's something more. So when Maya then enthuses you in another area, then you think, okay, there is hope.
Yes.
Like that. But there isn't, because you've already been there before, just you don't remember. That's another thing. If you remembered every lifetime, then you'd really know how boring it is. Right? And if there's no interest in Krishna, then what would you do? Totally bored of the material world. Right? Not interested in Krishna. You know, and because you're so bored, then what's the point of life? And, you know, you've already tried killing yourself so many times before, and you remember how that never worked out. So now what do? You know, you merged in Brahman, you came back. You know, you went to all the 14 planetary systems, you did everything. So what do you do? So that's why you forget. So it looks like, oh, it's new, it's fresh. You know, like that cliche of the goldfish and the, you know, in the jar. You know, they swim one way and then they come to the end of the glass and then they've seen that when they turn around, oh, what's that? And then they go that way. And when they get to the other side and they turn around, oh, look at that, something new. And then they do that all day. So like that. So we look at work in our little sphere and we think it's always new and fresh and all that, even though it's the same little sphere. Sages named Katha and Aitareya appear in every millennia, and their service is essential to human society. Such Vedic rishis are not exactly authors, but transmitters. They receive mantras in their meditation. With the passage of time, certain Vedic works lose popularity or are entirely forgotten on this planet. Eventually, a sage or demigod reveals it again, and their name becomes attributed to it. An example of such a lost mantra being revived is given in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Satisfied by such glorification, the powerful sun god assumed the form of a horse, Vajirupa, and presented to the sage Yajnavalkya Yajur mantras previously unknown in human society. From these countless hundreds of mantras of the Yajurveda, the powerful sage compiled 15 new branches of Vedic literature. These became known as the Yajasaneyi Samhita because they were produced from the hairs of the horse's mane. And they were accepted in succession by the followers of Kanva, Madhyandina, and other rishis, 12.6.72-73. Siddhanta, the Puranas are eternal, yet they rise and fall like the sun. Just as the Lord comes and goes as he pleases, so too does he speak the Veda through various sages at his whim. Riti. Next, Srila Baladev elaborates on the qualification of the main speaker of the Puranas, Suta Goswami, a sutta by caste, by quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Because then if you get them on that, okay, so then you can't get it that the literature, you know, the literature and how it stands. So then, well, what about that? You're saying it's some outstanding author and this, or what about this guy, Sutta, you know, what's his position? So you're trying to get rid of their authority from that position. Right? So you see is that they go along being very logical, and at some point then it just goes ad hominem. Or they go, you know, voidist. Does that make sense? Yes, just like that. They go one way and then they go with logic and all that as long as they have quotes in it, but as soon as you defeat them all, then they go to other things. So they take up, you know, they get you kind of angry, and so either that comes out as being nasty or, you know, going for voidism or something like this. So that's the problem. So you know you're doing good in the discussion if the other person's resorting to absolutely useless, you know, points. And, you know, and their attitude and all that. So
earlier in the big debate, if somebody does that, then everybody leaves at the time because everybody understood that this guy is over.
He's over. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. As soon as they take that up, they know he's finished. Yeah, now they start with that, so they never had anything to say in the first place. Right? Yeah. Siddhanta. Okay. Though the Puranas and Itihasas are Veda, Shudras are also entitled to recite them. That is on the strength of the following statement. Stri Shudra Dvijabandhunam Tvai Na Shruti Gochara Karma Shreshyasi Mudanam Shreya Evam Bhavet Iha Iti Bhara Tam Akyanam Kripaya Munina Kritam. The women Shudras and Dvijabandhus were not qualified to hear the Vedas, thinking that what would be the best for the foolish in terms of the best sadhana. Vyasa, by his mercy, wrote the Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:4:25. Right? So the point is that the Vedas has all the knowledge. Yes.
Maharaj, the language of the Shudras, the vernacular language, Sanskrit, or the Puranas, Mahabharata, is it syncretic language?
No. It's just a different. It means you have two kinds of Sanskrit. You have the Vedic and you have the classical. So the Shruti is in Vedic and the Smriti is in classical. Because classical is what you speak.
Shruti is a synthetic language, artificial.
No, they're both original languages.
Because that's what I don't understand. It's original language, and why Panini has to make some grammar corrections if the Sanskrit or Veda is perfect?
But he doesn't have to.
He doesn't
have to. People do all kinds of things. All he's doing is making, trying to, he's documenting what is the grammar, because he learned from Shiva. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, if he finds some differences in that, that's because there's difference in the Sanskrit that Shiva speaks and Sanskrit that Narayan speaks. So Jiva Goswami, he gives Narayan's grammar, Panini is Shiva's grammar. So there'll be some little difference. Like if you see in the Bhagavatam, depending upon who's speaking, the presentation of the Sanskrit is different. Like that, Indra has his own, Brahma has his, Shiva has. So there's eight different kinds of Sanskrit as it is spoken. So we go with the Narayan's grammar. So then Vyasadeva will be using that. And then Panini, he's received the grammar from Shiva. He got blessings from him because he did austerities to get his blessings. So then he's presenting that. So it's basically the same. It's like dialects. You know, you have a language and there's a dialect and how they speak is different.
The Mahabharata is the language that was spoken on the bazaar.
On the?
These are ordinary people.
Means Sanskrit, classical Sanskrit is what everybody speaks. If they get down to ordinary, then they start speaking Prakrit. Prakrit is the local languages. You know, like Braj Bhasha, Bengali, you know, how you say, Tamil, all these are all Prakrits. Tamil is actually a Prakrit of a Prakrit. But it's off of Paisach. Paisach is a prakrit of Sanskrit. It's a form of Sanskrit, but it's a form spoken by the Ganas. And then Tamil is off of that. So it's not that the Sanskrit itself is lower. It's that if they want to get down to the market, then you have places where they do speak Sanskrit, but they use the local language. And those local languages, they have their particular pronunciation based on generally the particular shakas and lines that they're following and their pronunciation in that Veda. So that brings out the nature of that. That's why it seems like if someone was telling that when they had I can't remember if it was the beginning or at the end, but they had a big program in Dwarka, because that's where they started the Padyatra from. And then they went around India and they came back there after 10 years. But when they started there, then they had because it's, you know, India, so it's in Gujarat. And so somebody was speaking in Hindi. No one really understood what he was talking about. So then, and I think Jai Padakumar has got up and started speaking in Bengali. Then they understood what he was talking about. So these original Prakrit languages, basically each one can understand the other. It'd be like, you know, Italian and Spanish, or, you know, Spanish and Portuguese. They can understand each other. They maybe can't speak that, but they can understand. Because they're the same language, you know, or Czech and Polish. A Czech person and a Pole can have a conversation. The Czech will only speak Czech, the Pole will only speak Polish. But they fully understand each other. It's just the particular dialect, what words they use, they wouldn't use it like that. Does that make sense? So they actually understand each other, because Bengali, Gujarati, all these, they're all like 90% Sanskrit. They just simplify the grammar. Instead of in a group, then all of them having different, it's all just all has the same ending. That's what makes it simple. The words are the same, just the grammatical is not as technical. So that's a prakrit. Well, something like Hindi, it's only about 60% Sanskrit. That's why, basically, unless you're from the area where it's spoken, you know, basically in UP, some part of UP, like around, you know, Faridabad, Faizabad, that area, no one else in India likes Hindi like that. You know what I'm saying? Because they're like Bengali. They like to talk Bengali as it is and use Bengali words. Tamil also, and like this. But in Hindi, if they're trying to be more upbeat, it's like they use words from everywhere. You know? Does that make sense? You know, the latest Hindi, I don't know what percentage, a huge percentage of English and words from everywhere, some Urdu, from, and just anywhere. Sorry?
English grammar.
Yeah. So they just throw that all in and like that. You want to emphasize something, you say it in English. Then you go back to speaking Hindi. Yeah. You know, does that make sense? So the point is, it's not that Sanskrit has some lower language, that this is a lower standard. This is just your standard spoken Sanskrit. And then the Veda, then that kind of grammar, that's what's used in all the rituals and everything like that. So then, and it's used to, you know, for quoting, to establish points and everything like that. So it's not used as a spoken language, but it's a used language. Does that make sense? Classical Sanskrit, that's what's spoken. Like that? So it's one language. Like that. It's not a different language. So it has one, you could say, the basic grammar is the same. There might be some slight differences for, you know, the eight different kinds of grammar. But Panini's revealed that one, and Vyasa uses Narayan's. I haven't heard of others giving the grammar for the other six.
Panini celebrated the one who perfected the language, who perfected Sanskrit. He celebrated it.
That's there. He perfected, but this is amongst scholars and mundaners. Because they're looking at, he got it from Shiva, so how can he be the one that perfected it? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't evolve. That's the whole point of Sanskrit. It doesn't evolve. They want to make it seem like that, then man thinks he's doing something. Just like man is evolving. Like that. He can't even remember, you know, what he ate for lunch yesterday. right? Well, if you go back, you know, to the time when, you know, the Vyasadeva and his students, they could hear it once and remember it their whole life. So how is man evolving? He's devolving, but not evolving. You know? So that's the thing, is that modern academics, they like to look at it this way, and then they can feel very good about themselves. They can pat each other on the back because they've come up with some new theory, and so therefore they're special. Because otherwise, if they're all just saying what's already there before, then what's the uniqueness of themselves?
Like Smriti, you know?
Yeah. So like that. They're just bringing, just the knowledge is there. The guy goes out, he discovers something, so he's the originator of that. It was already there. You know? Like, I remember, I'm not sure how long ago, like 10 years ago or something, there was this whole controversy because someone had started this thing of patenting herbs.
Yeah.
So then someone in America decided they're going to patent turmeric. And then that means all the Indians have to pay royalties to him. It's kind of like we've been using it for, you know, we've been using it in cooking when you guys were just going out and clubbing animals and eating them raw in your tradition. You know?
Yeah.
Like that. So that's the difficulty, is that they try to do all these things and claim it as their own. You know, it's Victoria Falls because this guy, he's already been there forever. Right? You know, so you don't mind that he gets a name for it and it's like that, it's known by that. But it should be understood that who made it? He didn't make it. God made it. Right? So all these different things, Sanskrit and grammar and that didn't come from Panini. It came from the Lord. Like that. So it's just standard academic, you know, how you say, newspeak. They just have to say these things to make themselves feel good. Otherwise they would have no position. Because they can't do anything. You know what I'm saying? The people who do this, they have a BA or an MA or a PhD, but in an art. They can't go out and get a job with that knowledge. Right? In fact, McDonald's won't even take them because they'll tell them they're overqualified. So other than teaching at the university, they have prospects. They have no prospects. So they have to make themselves look like that they're so smart and so... How are they smart? It's nice that they wanted to know these things, but then why not know something that's useful? So that's the difficulty, you know, in the modern academy. The Vedic academy also has problems with it if they're not devotees. But at least the knowledge, they're using it. They know the Vedic, they're using it. They know the class, they're using it. So it actually is being used, but in the modern, who uses? Like Egyptology, who cares about what they did 3,000 years ago? How are they bringing it forward and making it relevant for Egyptians today? Not at all. So it's just some fun to think about. You know what I'm saying? The kid goes out in the backyard and takes a stick and starts digging around in the garden and all that. You know, the ladies in the kitchen look out the back window and go, oh, how cute. Like that, right? You know? And they might get a cookie or something out of it. But now, adults, and they go out there and go out in the dirt and they take their little brush and like that, sit there brushing, and they'll spend years in this little area going down, you know, how you say, literally, you know, dust by dust, you know, level of that. And somehow or other, they're so glorious. You know? But I mean, what does it take to know how to dig like that? You just tell them, don't dig it up, break it. Just go a little carefully. Anybody could do it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. And then their interpretation of it, you know, it's like, how they come up with it? Who knows? Tyrannosaurus rex eats something. Somehow or another, they die in the place where they eat things. And then now when we dig them up, now Trantosaurus rex has small front legs. How do you know that's not the legs of the thing he ate? You know what I'm saying? So they just, who knows what they come up with, these guys? You know? So it's just, that's the problem. Is they have to create their own authority. You know, therefore you have the, you know, academic method. Because if you used any other method, they'd look like idiots. But if you use the academic method, they look good. So that's fine. They engage your intelligence and all that, but then when you come in contact with the actual knowledge of the Veda, then don't apply, use that kind of system, because it doesn't work. Is that okay? Yeah. Purvapaksha. Okay, so now they give Purvapaksha. This may give rise to several intractable doubts. Firstly, since the Mahabharata, the foremost of the Itihasas, was written specifically for those with no access to the Vedas, how can the Itihas be Vedic? That you're giving some access to it, that doesn't mean that it's not Vedic. You're just taking from there what is the, you know, just like, let us say you have some technical medical procedure or some medicine, but then, you know, people can't get a hold of that, but then they could take some, you know, they say, take some neem leaves and boil them in water, and then let that cool and all that, and then after that, then strain it, and then they could use that water as an antiseptic. So that's making accessible what's already there in the Ayurveda, but the doctor may be able to do very technical things. But the point is, it's just as effective.
Making accessible through language.
Through language means?
It means that by language, making a common language, Sanskrit, original Sanskrit, classic Sanskrit, making accessible for the Shudras.
No, it's the knowledge itself. Because the Vedic Sanskrit is dealing with so many things, it deals with everything, but especially what the work with so much, the Samhita, it's used for doing sacrifice. So those technical things like that, those aspects, then the general people aren't going to be involved in. Like that, Brahmins will be doing that. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas may be doing themselves for themselves, or they are bringing Brahmins to do the sacrifices and that for them, and then giving them dakshin. So that's technically where they're being used. So the essence of that, what's the philosophy and all that, that's given in the Upanishads. So the Karmis aren't using the Upanishads. That's Vedic also. Right? So that philosophy that's given in the Upanishads, then the language is there just because it's so technical. Then we see in the Mahabharata it's given in Bhagavad Gita, so it's accessible. So it's not a matter of language. It's a matter of that it's something that you can use. Because these Brahmins that are studying the Vedic Sanskrit, they're going to be talking to each other in classical Sanskrit. Like that. That's how it works. So it's not that they're using a different language. They're just giving the same. They're just giving the essence. Because the point is the Brahmins may like to intellectualize and all that, so they'll engage themselves that way, and then hopefully they come to a conclusion if they have a bona fide guru. But the Puranas just start with the conclusion. They start with the essence, especially Mahabharata. But of them, the essence being that it's about devotion to Krishna, that's given specifically in Srimad Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? Secondly, Ugrashrava Sutta is a half-caste descendant of a Kshatriya man and a Brahmana woman. Why did the sages at Naimisharanya invite him to speak the Puranas, even though he was not a pure Brahmin by birth? Only properly purified and trained Brahmanas should teach the Vedas. Therefore, the Puranas must therefore be non-Vedic. Right? Yeah, so then this would be the aspect where they're trying to maintain themselves, because except for their birth as a Brahmin, they have no qualifications as a Brahmin, or very minimal. So then they can only establish it by birth. If everybody's a Shudra, but then some are born in Shudra families, some, you know, that used to, you know, have been Shudras, some used to be Vaishyas, some used to be Kshatriyas, some used to be Brahmins, yeah, then that's the only way you tell the difference. And in this way, then they make themselves feel better. Right? But they always say it has to be non-Vedic. Why can't it be Veda that's spoken in this way so that you can approach it? Right? Thirdly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.13, it says, Manye tvam vishaye vacham snatam anyatra chandasata. We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects except some portions of the Vedas. And thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you. End quote. Suta Goswami was not expert in the Vedas, but was nonetheless being requested to narrate the Puranas. Therefore, how can the Puranas be part of the Vedas? Right? So the problem is it's in some portions, because there's a good chance that whoever's making this complaint, also, there are many portions of the Vedas they have no idea about. So that's the whole point, is that the Veda is so broad, people specialize in a specific area. Like the guy who knows grammar may not know astrology. And so does that mean now he's useless for discussing, you know, grammar? Right, Uttara. Anticipating these objections, Srila Jiva Goswami replies that just as all human beings are authorized to chant the holy names of Lord Krishna, even though those names are the most sacred essence of the Vedic hymns, the perfect fruit of the creeper of the entire Nigama, or Shruti, everyone is authorized to study the Itihasas of Puranas. Right? So, that's the whole point, is that when you're dealing with something that goes beyond the modes of nature, then there's no problem. Because you're dealing with the soul is able to, because the soul is engaged in the transcendental activity, that's why it works. Right? So you're talking about the conditioning. So the conditioning, that has a particular qualification. That can do a certain work. Right? That's the whole point. So this certain work can be done if you have the modes to work in that. So for that, you can say this one's qualified for this, that one's qualified for that. But when you're talking about something that's transcendental, all souls qualify. So then all souls qualify to hear the Mahabharata. I mean, and he's the Veda in the form of the Puranas and Itihasas. Because it's giving that essence, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. It depends on identification, yes.
And if you are under the mood, all our vision is cloudy then.
Yes. It will be cloudy and we'll identify according to the bodily concept.
Yes.
That's the difficulty.
Yes.
Instead of looking at it from the transcendental position. Because if something's engaged in the transcendental, it actually is perfect. All the secondary aspects, when they're connected to Krishna, they become perfect. So if someone's already connected to Krishna, that's already perfect. Even if all the secondary isn't necessarily. You know, and with time, as one advances, then those things that are useful, one will do, use. And those that aren't useful, one will not use. So, the holy name of Krishna is purely Vedic, but yet anyone may chant it, including those who have no right to study the Vedas. In the same way as Hari Nam is universally applicable on the authority of God Himself and the revealed scriptures, so the study of the epics and Puranas is unrestrictedly authorized for all persons. The Itihasas and Puranas are also purely Vedic. Yet even a sincere Shudra or outcast can approach them, just as he or she may chant the holy name of the Lord. Yeah. Or I could do like what Prabhupada does here and just say, just as one may chant the holy name of the Lord. It is true that a mantra with names of God is effective only when received from a bona fide representative of God in specific succession through proper initiation. So the same way is that the Vedic mantras, unless you have from a, you know, someone in the line, you've accepted initiation into that Veda, then you don't have the rights. The same way is then with these transcendental mantras, but that's, it's not dependent upon the birth, it's dependent upon faith. Right? That's why we choose the Pancharatra. The Bhagavat's the main, then supported by the Pancharatra, and then if there's more material need, then we extend out into the Veda. It is also true that in previous ages, out of fear of the adverse effects of offenses against Harinam, generally only those who are already purified worship the names of Krishna and his internal pleasure potency. Therefore, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in particular is not often mentioned openly in Shruti or Smriti. Nevertheless, in the current age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given a special concession, a kind of automatic or informal initiation to everyone, by ordering every man, woman, and child in the universe to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. In doing so, he has offered to take on his own head the reactions of our offenses against Harinam. We chant according to his order. Thus, even before being fully empowered by formal initiation to chant the mantra, persons in this age can chant the Mahamantra and take tangible spiritual advancement. As one can gain all perfection by chanting the Lord's holy name, which is the ultimate fruit of the Vedas, so by studying the Itihasas and Puranas, one can learn the essence of the Vedas, even without studying the Vedas themselves. If one could do so, perfection would be unattainable to those who are not twice born. See, because you have to understand is that the transcendental things are beyond. And so they're accessible. So the Pancharatra is Agama. It's coming from the Veda. But it actually is there before. Vaikuntha goes on by that. And then Bhagavat, that's Golok. Right? You know, specifically Braj. That's there. Then it starts to, you know, have the other aspects being touched. So it's the original aspect. So it's only because of our identifying that's the considerations for you need a particular qualification. Right? So since the Vedic mantras won't work unless one has that mode of goodness, that's why then one must be trained in goodness to be able to use them. But the transcendental mantras, because they're beyond goodness, then it doesn't matter the mode. Does that make sense? Like that. But we see the name has always been there. From Bhagavatam we always see it's always there. So whatever the age, whatever the consideration, always chanting the Lord's name was there. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. It wasn't. And then this age is just chanting the holy name. The Bhagavatam purport, Srila Prabhupada further validates Jiva Goswami's rebuttal to this objection. So this here is Jiva Goswami?
Actually, Jiva Goswami, he mentions a particular verse in Anucheda itself. Based on that, the whole vritti is written.
Oh, okay.
Why he wrote that verse.
Okay. The difference between the Vedas and Puranas is like the difference between the Brahmanas and the Parivrajakas. The Brahmanas are meant to administer some fruit of sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. But the Parivrajaka Acharyas, or learned preachers, are meant to disseminate transcendental knowledge to one and all. As such, the Parivrajaka Acharyas are not always expert in pronouncing the Vedic mantras, which are practiced systematically by accent meter by the Brahmanas, who are meant for administering Vedic rites. Yet it should not be considered that the Brahmanas are more important than the itinerant preachers. They are one and different simultaneously because they are meant for the same end in different ways. One is engaging one's material desires through positive purifying experiences, and the other is just dealing directly with the transcendental and then connecting your experiences to that transcendental. The other one you're purifying so that you'll appreciate, but it's not necessarily the Brahmins know that. Right? That someone, it's just like we were seeing before, is that let us say you go back to that example, the academic. He teaches the course. Then someone gets a degree in that. Then they get a good, you know, good standing and get good marks. Now they go then for a job interview. And so then as far as general society is concerned, that you have that degree and you got good marks, that's why you get a job. So they go in, the boss looks at the things or whoever is doing the interviews, and they see, okay, he's done well, he's got good marks, you know, some other things like this and that, some practical application here and there, blah. So then he gets the job. Now, as far as we're concerned, as far as the academics and the general society, it's because you did, you have the degree, that's why you have the job. But by the person who's hiring them, the only thing they're looking for in that is that he's got enough focus and determination to sit there for 4 years and go through this 10 hours a day, day in, day out, and get good marks, and then apply it in some practical, you know, little internship here or there, and you've got good reviews. That's why he's getting the job. Otherwise, if that boss comes across someone who has that focus and has that practicalness, though he doesn't have a degree, he will hire him. Right?
Mostly what happens nowadays is in the many of the corporate sectors in the software field, they look for your qualification before you got the degree. I mean, plus one and plus two. Like in IITs, what made you to get into IIT is that IQ, your sharpness. That is what is checked in the exam.
Yeah, they don't even care about what you learned.
They don't care what you learned, what you did. They only ask how you approached your project.
Okay. They want to see that. Because at that time, your brain's still working. Then they go to IIT and then they turn your brain off, right?
And most of the people are from different departments who go to software field. They're not from, everybody is not from computer science or IT.
Okay.
So it's like that.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. So it's even going a step back. Yeah, you just keep going. So, in preschool, what did you used to draw? With your crayon?
I'll say it's interesting. Right? This proves that how the main effort is put in those age between 14 to 16, 17.
Yeah.
And after that, actually, you need to analyze it, otherwise just making one drag through all the degrees.
Yeah, well, that's the thing before. And the Vedic thing is that you're an adult at 16, so when you see is that the Kshatriyas and all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Vaishyas and Shudras are all getting married at that age.
Yeah.
So the point is you should be able to maintain yourself. So whatever you've done before that, that's what should be able to maintain you. You know, does that make sense? So, and that works in your traditional society. It worked, you know, up to 100 to 200, you know, a couple hundred years ago. Because, you know, the people by then would be, they would be responsible for the family. They would, you know, have been married, or, you know, the parents are old, they're taking care. So at that age, they would work for a normal wage. Right? But in this modern society where everything gets thrown off, and the whole point, you can have a guy that's in that age, and he has zero responsibility. So he'll work for much less. So, therefore, you could get all the work done with all these teenagers, and then what would all the grihasthas do? Right? So then all these labor laws, they make it sound like, no, we want them to get educated and all that kind of jazz. But it's just a matter of practical stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just, remember I was doing wood shop, and, you know, had done it in junior high, then in high school. And then when I was checking out, you know, to become a devotee, the guy, the teacher, he made the point is that, just to make sure I understood, he says, you know that this, what you're learning now, when you finish high school, you could get a job at $20 an hour. He just wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing something weird.
Yes, yes.
You know? And then, you know, okay, yes, of course. So the point was, is out of high school, what you had learned in with woodworking, you could go out and get, like I said, $20 an hour. Like that. And I think nowadays, the guys in those skills, unless they're the head guy, that they only get $20 an hour. You know, I spent 50 years or 40 years, so it's like, things haven't gotten any better. You know? So that's the fun part is that trades you can do. There's a good chance the plumber that comes and fixes all the stuff, or the roofer, all these guys that make more money than any academic on the planet,
yeah.
They only, you know, have a high school degree, if that. You know, while the other guys are spending money and then have a debt until they're 50, these guys are already making money. Like that. So who's smart?
So my mother gave me a new revelation recently. In India now, the rates of the lands in all the villages, especially in South, it's ridiculously increasing. Like per acre, it's around 1 crore. Like that.
Yes.
Those guys were running to US to earn a lot of money. When they come back, whatever they sold to go to US, they cannot even purchase that.
No. Yeah, that's fun. Well, if they just left it there and respected that, they come. Yes, yeah, like that. One businessman was telling me this story about, I think it's somewhere around, like, you know, Faizabad, Faridabad, like that, as Delhi expands. What before was out in the boonies, just out there. Now it's, you know, they sell the land by, you know, square millimeter, you know, like that. And so the whole village, they're so rich. One of them thought, oh, I want to buy a Mercedes. And then all of them thought, well, why? We'll all buy Mercedes. You know, maybe we can get a deal. So here's a deal to buy 125 Mercedes-Benz. You know, and they're not buying, you know, just, you know, A-class. They're buying, you know, the upper end. And the CEO of Mercedes flew out to India, went to that village and sat down and took all their orders, got all the things, the colors, the things, details and all that. It was the biggest single order in the history. Right? And this is a bunch of farmers. And he was saying, he was giving you how they talk about it, like Audi. You know, it's got those four circles. They, you know, one of them was saying, well, I don't know if I want to buy Mercedes. I was thinking about getting the four Bengals. You know? So this is the level they work at. You know, it's probably technical means a tractor for that, right? You know? So that's the fun. The biggest order in history, because a shop, though they might order 10 or 20 or 5, no one orders 125, right? Like that. And this was to one village. This wasn't like for the whole of India or full of Asia. This is one village. Like that, yeah. So that's these guys are kicking themselves. They went over there, worked so hard on that, and then the guy that used to work for them, he's more richer than them. Yeah.
Once in my city in Bangkok, I saw a red Indian farmer came to buy a tractor. He was mistreated because he don't have money. He was carrying a bag. He threw the bag on the floor. The money wasn't the bag. He threw it down. He threw all the money, some minutes. Even expensive than Mercedes.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. Like that.
Carrying like that on the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, what else do you do with it? Yeah. Yes. There's no difference between the Vedic mantras and what is explained in the Puranas and Itihasa. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, it's mentioned the Madhyandina Shruti, that all the Vedas, namely the Sama, Atharva, Rig, Yajur, Puranas, Itihasas, Upanishads, etc., are emanations from the breathing of the Supreme Being. The only difference is that the Vedic mantras are mostly begun with pranava omkara, and it requires some training to practice the metric pronunciation, of the Vedic mantras. But that does not mean that Srimad Bhagavatam is of less importance than the Vedic mantras. On the contrary, it is the ripened fruit of all the Vedas, as stated before. Besides that, the most perfect liberated soul, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, is absorbed in the studies of the Bhagavatam, although he is already self-realized. Srila Sukadeva Goswami is following his footsteps, and therefore his position is not the least less important because he was not expert in chanting Vedic mantras with metric pronunciation, which depends more on practice than actual realization. Right? Because in the Vedic, in the tradition, you teach these to kids. The younger they are, the better they learn. Remember we had this one he was like 8 or something. He would sit there in the class with all these others. For 3 days, he'd pay attention when you're chanting the mantra. So for 10 days, you go through them word, one word at a time. Then after 10 days, then you chant them all the 10 verses together, just like that. You know, just right after another, and just repeat the whole thing. Before that, you just went through once like that and that. after the third day, he wouldn't pay attention anymore. He'd just sit there and nap, fall asleep, so many things like that. So then, you know, you expect, okay, then when we get to the time of chanting, he won't know. He knows. In other words, he didn't need 10 days. 3 days were enough, and he'd already memorized it. He doesn't know what it means, what it's for, doesn't even care. You know how when they're teens, you want to teach them a mantra, why do I need to know this? What am I going to do with this? Why is this important? The little kids just memorize. So that's the whole point, is that you take this thing, is that, but when they learned it, they didn't have any brains about it, right? They weren't interested in it. They didn't apply their intelligence. They just learned it because it's new, it's different, it's fun. You know, it's like kids learning language, vocabulary. It's new words, it's fun. So then this whole thing is they're not expert, but it means they're expert in chanting, but they didn't know what it meant. So you have to be taught what it means. So the Puranas teach you what it means. Like that. Realization is more important than parrot-like chanting, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.13, purport. Because the Puranas explain the parts of the Vedas difficult to understand, and because they complete the fragmented parts of the Vedas, the Vedas are firmly established in the Puranas. This explains the quotation from Vishnu Purana. So this is Baladev. Yes. Though the Puranas are included as smritis among the works like Manusmriti, which explain the Vedas, because they are manifested from the Supreme Lord in the form of Vyas, they are superior. Proof for this is given in Padma Purana. Priti. So far, Jiva Goswami has established beyond doubt that the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic. However, one may remain unconvinced and stubbornly consider them as part of the, quote-unquote, the inferior category of smritis, works written by, quote-unquote, ordinary sages in order to elucidate the meaning of the more, quote-unquote, authoritative shruti. Even if this were the case, the Itihasas and Puranas can be accepted as the best commentary work to elucidate the Vedas due to the preeminence of the propounder. Hence, the Puranas, though included as smritis among the works like Manusamhita, are superior because they are manifested from the Supreme Lord in the form of Vyas. Okay? So that's the whole point, is you have to know what they're for, the essence. If you're just taking their situation, that's not enough. That's like taking the Jnana Shakti and saying it's the superior. Because it's the existence, everything else is based on that. Without that, it's like saying, you know, money is the most important. Like that. It's just like this. If I took this thing and said, okay, you're doing this, it's like I'm saying, okay, we want you to work. We have this great deal. We have to nail down on that, but it's happening on Christmas, right? And we want you to go and do that deal. And it's not just, though, you pop out there. It's happening, you know, in another continent. So you're going to have to fly out there, you know, get organized, meet the people, get prepared and all that and all that. So you're going to have to leave some days before Christmas and come back some days after Christmas. Right? So then you say, no, but, you know, I already have plans with the family. I promised the kids and that, you know, because we do this to them all the time. It's a soccer game, or I had to do this, or, you know, recycle, and I didn't go because of business and all that. And then the guy then now makes the, you know, important point. Well, means without money you can't take care of your family. So that means your family is dependent on money. So money is more important than family. You understand? This is the logic. This is what's going on in the world. Is that we take it, the more secondary it is, it's more important than the others. Because it's the most grossest. You see it on that, it's, you know, just like the meal. Without the plate, you can't have a meal. Can I serve you a meal without a plate? I can't bring it from the kitchen, so the plate is the most important thing. This is the mentality we're dealing with. That's the smart one. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty that we're dealing with here, is that people are taking the external and gross that they can see and trying to make that more important than the actual real thing. Somebody say? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.